Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Scott McNally here, Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 75, and today we have with us IFBB Pro Tricky Jackson. Tricky is here to promote his upcoming NPC contest, the Tricky Jackson Classic, held in Kentucky at the beginning of October. We're also going to discuss Tricky as a bodybuilder. Tricky is known for very entertaining posing routines, and he's also been a very prolific competitor, competing at multiple shows every season and having competed now for 30 years. So stay tuned for that in just a minute. And then later this week, we'll have another episode of Advices Radio featuring Coach Matt Jansen. Matt talks to us about the five athletes that he has competing in the Olympia this year. So stay tuned for that one. And guys, let's get to Tricky Jackson. Here we go. Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and up next with me, IFBB Pro Tricky Jackson. Tricky, thank you for being here, brother. I really appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely, man. I've been looking forward to it ever since we talked about it, and excited to be here, man.
I've been following you for a long time, and you actually guest posed for my first contest.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I believe that was John Simmons' show.
I'll tell you what, man, you blew me away because, you know, it was my first show, and I had been to a few shows before that, and I'm watching my competitors as they're up there posing and hitting all their shots, and I'm feeling like, yeah, you know, I'm a competitive bodybuilder now. I'm really doing this. And then I see this big black dude who's like three times wider than I thought was humanly possible get on stage, and not only was he hitting the poses, but he's popping and he's locking and he's doing some crazy shit that I've never seen someone do on stage. So that was my experience, man. You humbled me and you inspired me at the same time.
Hey, man, I don't want to say from day one that's been my thing, but early in my career, I made the decision that, you know, putting together these types of routines would be what was going to set me apart from a lot of other athletes. I was a big fan of a guy named Russ Testo.
Yeah, I know who he is. No kidding.
Remember Russ Testo?
Yeah.
And, you know, the first time I ever saw that guy pose, he posed at the Arnold Classic. He was one of the entertainers for the night event. And this was probably, man, early 90s. Okay. And, you know, I was there as a fan, spectator. And when I saw this guy pose, I was like, man, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to bring exciting routines to the stage. And I said, I might not ever be the biggest guy on stage, but I'll be able to put on a show. I could do the things that he was doing. And that kind of started from there. I started really working on choreographing routines each year.
No kidding. Yeah, that makes total sense to me, man. So, you know, I want to let everybody know the main reason that we brought Tricky on tonight is because we want to promote his contest. But I also, though, man, I want to ask you just a lot more. I want to take this opportunity to learn more about you and to share, you know, some of your story with the audience. Because I, you know, we've got a lot of generations of bodybuilding podcast listeners, and my generation of podcast listeners has heard you a ton. You know, I've heard you on a bunch of different shows, and I'm just wondering if maybe some of the newer guys might not have had a chance to hear you yet. So that's what I'm most excited about. But what is the name of your show? Let's start there, and we'll come back to that a little bit later. What's the name of it, and when's the date?
Okay, the name of the show is the NPC Tricky Jackson Classic. It is October the 6th in Lexington, Kentucky. This is actually the 22nd year that I've promoted this event. The name has changed. Over the years, I started off as the Bluegrass Muscle Classic. I ran it under that name, I believe, for about 5 or 6 years. And then 1 year, I actually had it as the Kentucky State championships.
Oh, okay.
Because that particular year, they didn't have any promoters that were willing to take on the state show.
Yeah.
And so we wanted that going. So I had it as a state show 1 year. And then from there, I changed the name to Tricky Jackson Classic. And that was all about trying to continue to brand my name.
Yeah.
I was really good friends early in my career with a guy named Skip McCoor.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure you remember Skip. And, you know, I used to talk to Skip a lot, in particularly back in the days when I used to compete in the Team Universe. We became good friends, and we shared a lot of ideals. And, you know, one of the things that he told me was early in my career, and he was already having success from the standpoint of business,
yeah,
not just on stage, but business off the stage. And he was one of the ones to told me to find my niche. And so between those two things, the first thing was to really focus on my posing. Then the second thing I took from that was to start working on branding my name. And so that was one of the reasons I changed it to the Tricky Jackson Classic, because then that was just one other thing in the sport that I could use to promote my name in the industry.
That makes total sense, man. And I want to come back to it because there's so much to talk about. And also, you know, the NPC in Kentucky is it's no slouch of a state. There's some awesome competition there. So we will get back to that. Now, it makes total sense to me that you were inspired by Russ Testo. I mean, I could see that he's a real entertaining guy. And this is not to take away from him whatsoever, man. But you to me, have a much more complete bodybuilder physique. To me, pretty cool to see somebody who actually has, you know, world-class physique up there, you know, that's hitting all this crazy stuff, man. This is what I always ask guys, because I'm the opposite. I'm not a great poser. Were you always good at this kind of thing? Like, did you dance when you were younger, for instance? Because I didn't do any kind of dancing. I talk to guys that they've done stripping and that's how they've got good at it. For me, I have not a bone in my body that can dance, though. That's what I got to tell you, Tricky.
I did a little bit of both, actually, man. So oh, okay. You say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a background in break dancing.
No kidding.
So I was a very good break dancer back in the day, and I used to compete
in
different break dance competitions. I actually learned how to do some some of my moves from some guys from the East Coast. When I lived in Lexington, Kentucky, when I was younger, as a teenager, I had a family that lived around the corner from me, and they had a nephew that used to come visit in the summertime. He was from New York. It was actually the New York City Breakers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were one of the top breakdance groups that were known back during that period of time. And so he taught me some different up rock moves. He taught me how to do the, some of the floor work, windmills, and things like that. I already knew how to do like the wave and the different types of ticking and things like that. But
yeah,
he actually helped me take my breakdance to the next level.
No kidding.
So now when I first started bodybuilding, I wasn't necessarily doing that in the beginning. But like I said, as time progressed and I started seeing, you know, what some of the guys were doing, and I was like, you know, I can bring something different. Then when I saw Russ, that made an impact on me starting to add some of these things in, as well as some other entertainers. I call them entertainers, but I should say bodybuilders,
yeah,
that were entertaining early, you know, like Melvin Anthony, Darren Charles.
Yeah.
These guys were some of the guys that obviously they were pro before me. And so I was able to see some of these guys do what they were doing, and it just even pushed me even more to focus on, honing in on my skills of posing and making more creative routines. So I think in the beginning, I would just throw dance moves in here and there.
Okay.
And then over a period of time, it got to the point where I really was actually choreographing the routine from beginning to end. Here's something you'll notice. And if you don't have a keen eye, a lot of people don't notice it. But are you familiar with a guy named Clarence Devis?
I don't know. No, I'm not.
Clarence Devis was a 212 pro for a while. Then he moved to the open class. The guy's a mass. He's a monster, man. I mean, he's comparative to William Bonnick. He's a William Bonnick type guy.
Yeah, and so real Bonnick compact also, and just no real yes, compact yes. And taking up every inch of muscle space he can. That's what it sounds like.
Exactly. This guy's very compare. He's very. You compare him to William Bonnick. with the only thing missing was he was never able to really get that 100% conditioning like William is doing currently.
Okay.
But same type of physique. But the guy used to do, you know, breakdance moves in his routine. And we were in a couple 212 shows together, and I remember us being in a couple pose downs. But one of the things I used to try to tell, if a person has a trained eye, you could see that there was no fluidity in what he did. He would hit a couple poses, then he would do a couple breakdance moves, then he'd hit a couple poses.
Yeah.
And if you take somebody like Darren Charles, myself, Marvin Anthony, I'll tell you another guy who's really good, Dean Kamali.
Oh, yeah.
Ty Green.
Yeah.
We actually put our routine together and we flow from one move to the next, whether it's a breakdance move, whether it's a moonwalk, whether it's a you know, into a pose. There's actually, you can tell a difference in the choreography as opposed to somebody that just, you know, okay, I'm going to hit this pose, now I'm going to dance for a minute.
Right.
Now, Clarence was exciting because he was able to do those dance moves, but to the trained eye, you could see that there was no real choreography to it. It was just freestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
Dance. So I used to always kind of hate when we would end up in that comparison or we would end up in that, in a pose off, because I'm like, you know, my routines are better than this guy's. He's just freestyling. So, but yeah, my point was, I got to the point where choreographing the routine from beginning to end was something that I invested a lot of time in, so that it would be fluid on stage and would be very entertaining at the same time.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me, and it's evident in watching you pose. I want to go back to this breakdancing, man. This is something I may have heard this before because it's really ringing a bell, but tell me more about this. So you actually competed on like a high level with this, huh?
Yeah, I don't know how necessary of a level I would call it, but you know, when I was in Lexington, Kentucky, they used to have a little nightclub for teenagers, and they would have breakdance contests out there. And so we would actually we would go out there, we would compete in the breakdance contest. I won several contests. I actually had a group that I performed with. You know, my brother, I had another good buddy, man, who I'm actually friends with today. His name's Jerome Brown. He actually helps me with my show today. That's how long we've been friends, probably 40 years, man.
Okay.
And he helps backstage with the show. But, you know, he was part of my breakdance team. And we would compete as a group in different events. They actually had, I think it was in Lexington, they also had a television show. Huh. I don't know if you remember, it was like Soul Train.
Oh, yeah, of
course. American Bandstand.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a local show that they had on one of the local stations where they had the young teenagers come on there and dance. And we had segments where we would do breakdance routines. And they would have breakdance contests on there. So we won a couple of there. And then we actually did a commercial where we had a breakdancing part in a commercial that we did back in the day for a department store. At the time, it was called Shillitoe's. And I think later it became it was something like McAlpin's or something like that. Is what I think it ended up changing to later. But we actually did a commercial, and we did a breakdance part in the commercial. So yeah, I mean, I got a lot of opportunities back then with my breakdancing, and it was really nice to know that even after that era kind of faded away for a short period of time, I was still able to incorporate that into something else that I became passionate about, and obviously it's bodybuilding.
Oh yeah, what was the name of that group you had?
Oh man, man, I cannot remember. Oh, man. It's been so long.
If you remember, I want to hear what the name was, because I'm curious now. I've seen you take your routine way past bodybuilding though. I actually saw you on national TV. Tell me about when you were on America's Got Talent.
Yeah, man, that was a fun time. It was actually fun, but it was a little bit stressful at the same time, because I had a guest posing appearance in Florida for Tim Gardner.
Okay.
And actually, let me back up for a second. What ended up happening was they were searching for new ideas and for new talent to bring onto the show.
Okay.
And so they have directors that would scout the internet, try to find different people that they thought might be good on the show.
Hmm.
And so they ran across one of my posing routines on the internet. And they contacted me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming on an audition. Oh. And, you know, they actually, you know, paid my transportation and everything to get there, man. So it was really cool. They flew me out and I auditioned in Atlanta. And I actually was a part of the very last audition before they would go on to the Las Vegas round.
Hmm.
So I auditioned and then I made it through. I got enough folks to make it through to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, we got to get you back in Las Vegas next weekend. I was like, oh man, you know, I've got a contractual obligation to be at this appearance.
Oh man.
So, they were really great and they worked with me. I ended up flying to Florida that Friday, I think, guest posed on Saturday. I caught the red eye out that Saturday night to Las Vegas.
Wow.
Where they put us up in the Hard Rock Hotel.
Yeah.
And then we started shooting and working on everything that Monday. But technically, I was supposed to be there on that Friday. So when I got there, I was already like 2.5 days behind everybody else.
Okay.
So I tell people all the time, I think that I would have done a lot better if it hadn't have been for the fact that I only had a week to really, I didn't have really enough time to try to get new outfits together.
Okay.
Come up with a new routine. And all that stuff. So I ended up having to do the same routine that got me to Vegas.
Okay.
And so I think that's the reason I didn't get to move ahead to the next actual show.
Yeah.
But I believe if I'd have had a good month or so, I could have came up with some outfits, man, and another routine. I think I could have got to the next level. And it just so happened I never got the opportunity to really just sit down and work on it and try to go back and audition again.
Right on, man. That's cool. Yeah,
but, you know, it was a great opportunity. Fun while it lasted, man. When I got that for the next 2 or 3 years, man, I was getting a lot of guest appearances just based on the fact that I was on that show.
No kidding, man. I bet. That's really cool. And, guys, if you want to check that out, if you go over to the Advices Radio Facebook page, we can post videos there. I'm going to post a link to the YouTube video of Tricky when he was at America's Got Talent because that was pretty cool. I saw you on that both times. What are your plans at this point as far as your own personal bodybuilding goes?
Well, I don't know. You probably don't know, and a lot of the listeners may not know, but last year in July, I actually retired after I competed at the Chicago Pro.
Yep, I remember that.
Chicago Pro, and I think I won Chicago Pro. I believe it was in 2013.
Okay.
And one of the things I said to myself, I had a goal, first of all, was to try to reach 30 years. And so last year was my 30th year competing.
Hell yeah.
In NPC / IFBB. I never missed a year without competing in a show.
Wow.
So so I had reached that goal. I'm still working on trying to get that in the Guinness Book of World Records. And then my other thing was that I got to the point where, you know, I had competed in probably, let me think, I turned pro in 2005, started competing in 2006, so I competed professionally for 11 years. I did about 4 shows a year.
That, which is an insane number for 1 year, let alone every year.
Exactly. I competed a lot, man. I'm kind of like Kevin Lavrone back in the days when he competed. But I did probably about 40 shows. And in that 40 shows, I placed in the top 5 once the 212 came along. I placed in the top 5 in about 60, maybe 70% of the shows that I competed in, I was in the top 5.
Yeah.
And so I got to the point where I said, well, if I no longer can make the top 5, then that'll be a sign it's probably time for me to hang it up. And,
okay.
And that was the other thing. Last year was the first year I think I did – I believe it was 2 shows, Dallas and Chicago, and I didn't make the top 5 in either of those. And I hadn't qualified for Olympia since 2015, so that was 2 years in a row where I didn't qualify for the Olympia. So that was kind of the sign that started telling me maybe I need to just, you know, step away. And I didn't want to get to the point where I was just continuing to fall back in the rankings and fall back into placings, man. So
that
made me, you know, kind of decide, okay, I'm going to hang up and just continue to promote, continue to judge, and continue to coach. But fast forward, now I've been off the stage for a year. I'm starting to get that itch again.
Can't stay away, huh? What is it about competing that you love? Because I imagine that whether you compete or not, you're going to always bodybuild, and that you know, it's something that's just going to be part of your life, at least for some time, probably. But what is it specifically about competing that's drawn you back?
Well, one of the things is the classic physique division.
Huh.
So yeah, the classic physique is one of the things that's got me thinking about making a comeback.
Interesting.
And then, you know, the other thing is, I'm going to say two other things. The other thing is the fact that, you know, Dexter's still doing really well. He's younger than me by about 3 years, but he's still doing really well. And I know deep inside that this last couple of years, I wasn't really 100% focused, because I made a move. I made a move from Kentucky to Mississippi. And so it got to, you know, it was one of the things where, you know, you change gyms, you know, you don't have the same training partner, you know, you're trying to get back in a rhythm, you're trying to get set and established, you know, in your new, you know, your new location. And so a lot of things, you know, that for us as bodybuilders were kind of like distractions that didn't allow me to focus 100%. So I still think that I still have something left in the tank. Whether that's as a 212 competitor, whether that's a classic physique competitor, that's the, you know, decision that I'm going to be working on here over the next 2 or 3 months. But, you know, I still got, you know, really good balance. I still got, you know, a good amount of muscle, injury wise, other than, you know, some nagging elbow pain, knee here and there, you know, I really don't have any type of major injuries, so I can still train and be competitive. So, but as for coming back, reason wise, the other thing would be, you know, it's exciting to be on stage. And I think the other thing is that it helps keep the name relevant. And I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
When Ronnie Coleman retired, now this may not be the best time because obviously he's a Mr. Olympia. So, you know, he's going to be relevant whether he does anything or not because he was one of the greatest of all time. But
sure.
You figure there were two or three times where he said he was going to make a comeback and everybody got all excited. And he never really made that comeback. But in that period of time when he talked about it, he launched a new supplement line. And then, you know, he was doing this and he was doing that. So, and I remember certain media outlets saying, oh, he's not going to come back. He's just doing that to get his name back out there. And so, you know, that is part of it as well, because, you know, I noticed the difference from when you're competing and being competitive from the standpoint of, you know, your name still being relevant and people following in social media, and even from the standpoint of streams of revenue, there's a difference from when you're still competing and then when you're not, unless you're one of these guys. Again, like I said, that's a, you know, an eight-time Mr. Olympia, but how many guys like out there are going to be like that? You know,
sure.
There's only one Ronnie Coleman, there's only one Jay Cutler, and there's only one Phil Heath. So, I mean, that's three people. But that's the other reason that I'm considering making this move. I feel like I can still be competitive and I can still, you know, generate revenue based on keeping my name relevant. If I get back on stage, that's what I'm weighing in on as I make a decision on this comeback.
That makes sense, man. It'd be interesting to see what you could do with the classic division. You got, you know, a lot of muscle on you, obviously, but you do have, you know, like you have a smaller structure underneath all that muscle, you know, small joints, you know, smaller waist. I could see you, you definitely pulling that together, man. And you know what else too, the division, I feel like that they put more on posing in that division. So I think that you would have a one up. I mean, not only with your routine stuff, but you know, obviously you've spent a lot of time too perfecting your body in your mandatories.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And that's the other thing I like about that is it does still have the posing element to it. And early in my career, that's another thing that I did was I used to do a lot of the classic poses.
Yeah.
You know, I would put a lot of poses in there that I would get from somebody like Lee Labrada, who was one of my idols coming up early in my career. The same thing with Sean Ray, who's also another a good classic poser. And arguably, even though he was a big guy for his height and stature, you know, he still falls in the lines to me of one of those classic type physiques and classic type looks.
Yeah.
Much so like a Lee Labrada, as opposed to guys like Dorian Yates and Nasser El Sombadi that were just a big, you know, blow your way type guy. So
right.
But yeah, I would have to come down. I believe my weight would be, I think it's 180 for my height.
Okay.
And
that's,
you know,
a lot, man. What would have you competed at in 212?
In 212, I competed anywhere from 192 to 202.
Okay, so it's not crazy talk then. This is doable. I mean, it'd be doable. Scary. Yeah. It'd be scary, I'm sure, because when you were getting to, like, when you say 190, that's probably a very depleted 190, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It was a, I turned pro as a middleweight at 176, you know, honestly, I was probably more like about 178 once we made weights and then started to fill back out and everything.
Sure.
But that's basically the look that I would probably be bringing back to stage, would be a look comparative to what I was when I turned pro.
Interesting. Interesting, man. So let's shift back to the show. I mean, so tell me a little bit more about this, because I feel like Kentucky has some pretty deep competition in general.
You know, what's outstanding about Kentucky, man, is just to give you a little bit of history. So the first pro to come out of Kentucky was Porter Cottrell.
Okay.
Remember that name?
Oh, absolutely.
And Porter Cottrell was a phenomenal guy, man. He was also another guy that was inspiring to me early in my career. Anytime I had a conversation with him, he was always motivating, uplifting, and that type of thing. So he was the first. Then I was the second. When I turned pro, by the time I turned pro, Porter had retired, I believe. And so from 2005 to about 2013, 14 maybe.
Okay.
I was really the only pro in Kentucky. Over the last 3 years, man, we've had a slew of pros that are coming up through the ranks now. You know, we've got a guy named Kevin Johnson that just turned pro in, I think he turned pro in men's, in bodybuilding in the light heavyweight class, but he's going to be competing in classic physique.
Okay.
And he's, I think he actually just did a show. It might've been Chicago, and I believe he came in, he's a third or fifth. So he placed really well. We've got a bikini pro named Jennifer Andrews that turned pro in the last 4 or 5 years. We've got Donna Salib that just recently turned pro in women's physique, as well as Monica Hornback. So, I mean, we've had a slew of athletes turn pro over the like I said, 5 years, man. So it's really kind of cool to see that. I hate that it's near the end of my career when these guys are starting to, you know, flourish now, but you know, a lot of these guys, when I talk to them, congratulate them, they always say that I was inspiration to them as they were on their journey to try to reach to the pro ranks. So, but yeah, back to what you're saying, Kentucky's really flourishing right now, not only from the standpoint of the shows that are put on in the area, but a lot of these athletes now, after doing these local state qualifying and regional events, are going on to turn pro. And yeah. So I'm really glad to see that. Matter of fact, I had a thing last year at my show where I actually bought all the pros up from our area that were in attendance of the show up on stage.
Okay.
And we had about 12 pros in the audience, or that were either in the audience or had a booth at my show that came on stage. And it was really cool to see how far Kentucky's come.
That's pretty cool, man. That's pretty awesome. Now, who are your guest posers going to be? Are you going to bring people up? And next question, of course, is are you going to guest pose at your own show? Because I think you should.
Well, the first part of that is my guest poser this year is Charles the Tank Dixon.
All right.
You familiar with the Tank?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, that guy, he's a great guy, man. I don't know if you ever had a chance to talk to him, man. We've been friends probably for at least 8 years. I think it was my very first pro win was the Dallas Europa. And he came in second to me. I think I got in. I edged him out by 1 point. And I remember having a conversation with him a year or two later. He was thinking about hanging it up. And I said, man, your physique's too good, man. I said, all you need is to deal with the right coach, someone that can dial you in, man. I said, your career's going to skyrocket. And fast forward 3 or 4 years, man, he's one of the top guys in the 212 division right now. I mean, the guy's mass and his shoulders and his small waist is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, his stature and condition that he brings. And, you know, again, it's just getting with the right guy, man. He's been working with Trey Hodge.
Okay.
Dr. Trey. And he's been doing wonders with him.
That's so cool, man. That's cool.
He's going to come in. He's going to be my guest poser. And that's one of the things I think that separates my show from some of the other shows in the state. And all the shows are good shows, man. All the guys do a great job. Brent Jones does a great job. Kentucky Muscle in the Derby. Gene and Tina Good, they put on the state show, which was this past weekend. They do a great job, a great stage. And then we got Jeff Sherman, a new promoter that's been putting on one of the natural shows. I think this is going to his third year. But, you know, everybody does a really good job. Our director, regional director is Gary Udit. And, you know, he's a standard, you know, for everybody to follow.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, it's a really good group of guys in that area in Kentucky. But the difference in my show is I always bring a pro in to guest pose. And a lot of shows have gotten away from that.
Okay.
And I hate to see that. There's a couple reasons I like to bring in the pros. One is I like to give back.
Yeah.
Sport. And I feel like, you know, these guys, you know, work their butts off to get that status. And it's one way I know that these guys, you know, make a living. So I always try to bring somebody in. Normally it's somebody that I have a relationship with. I know them.
Yeah.
We're friends in the industry. They normally give me a good deal, but I still put some money in their pocket and take care of them. But, I know from the standpoint of competing and being an athlete and guest posing, that's one of our streams of revenue. So I always try to bring a guest poser in. The second reason is, you know, a lot of times some of these up and coming amateurs never get opportunity to walk up to a pro and have a conversation with them. You know, if you go to a competition, and I remember, I'll tell you a story. I remember meeting Kevin Lavroni 1 year. I was at the Junior USAs and I was competing. He was the guest poser, but he was also in training for the Olympian. I think he was 2 weeks out.
Oh, wow.
Man,
he must have looked insane.
He looked really good, man. He was in shape and face sunk and all that, big as a house.
Yeah.
But he wasn't very approachable, man. I mean, he didn't want to really talk. And, you know, back on Kevin, me and Kevin are actually good friends now, and I understand because I've been on both sides.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was one of those situations where I had opportunity to meet a pro, and it wasn't necessarily the best experience.
Okay.
And I had that happen with several other, you know, pros during my amateur time that I would meet, and just like having a conversation with them was really tough. But I understood if when they were competing, it was a different mindset.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I bring in these guest posers, I try to, you know, make sure it's somebody that I bring in that's going to be very personable. They don't mind talking to people.
Okay.
You know, people can pick their brain, get some information. You know, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think about this diet? What do you think about this show? You know, tell me something from your experience that might help me in my journey.
Yeah.
Those type of things, man, you know, it's one thing to be able to, you know, communicate with people on social media, but it's another thing to have that personal contact with somebody and be able to have a conversation with somebody. So, you know, I like to give people that opportunity to actually walk up to a pro and be able to talk to him for 5 or 10 minutes and walk away with some information. So, you know, that goes back to who I select that I like to bring in as my guest posers, man. And I'll give you some examples of some of the guys that I brought in. Always get great feedback from these guys. I've had Jose Raymond.
Nice.
Don't know if you've ever had a conversation with him, but the guy's so down to earth, man. He's real. He'll tell you anything you want to know. He doesn't mind sharing his time with you, man.
Super guy cool. Guy Sister Nino. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He's done some amazing things too. You know, with just I remember when he was I think it was a middleweight. You know, yep. And he was competing nationally, and he was like all quads at the time. You know, he hardly had an upper body compared to his legs. Man, he's done a great job evening that out.
Oh, yeah, man. Guy's a workhorse, man. Him and Jose both. And they're so focused. They're so driven. And, I mean, that's on and off the stage, man. They're great. They're great ambassadors for sport. And those are great guys for people to talk to learn, you know, the do's and don'ts of the sport on stage and off.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Other people I've had that have been very successful, I think, in the sport and they're easy to talk to, Stan McQuay.
Nice.
McQuay here. I've had Darren Charles. Dexter Jackson, and the list goes on, man. But that's the one thing that I've done every year for 22 years I've had this show is I've brought in a guest poser, somebody that's personable, people can walk up to and have a conversation, and I always get positive feedback from my fans and say, hey, Tricky, man, we're so glad you brought this guy out here. I've never talked to a pro before, man. The guy was great. So now, second part of that question, am I going to pose? I have posed every year. For the last 21 years, I've done something on stage, and
hell yeah.
Normally, I'll either do my pose routine. Then the second thing I like to do is I've done a routine with my kids.
Oh, no kidding!
And then the third thing is normally I'll come out and do a little pose down with whoever my guest poser is.
That's fun, man. That'll be really cool.
And yeah, and that's one of the things, man. The fans always like. Now I'm in a different boat right now. I'm trying to decide how I'm gonna do it for this year. My kids are older. I got one now that's about to turn 17. I got one that's 14. They're a little older and they think they're too cool now to go on stage.
Oh yeah, 17-year-old. He's never gonna want to get up there with you. It's never gonna happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now. Maybe 5 years ago. Yeah, but not now, Dad.
Right.
So.
And maybe 5 years later too. Who knows? But right now, that's not the window that they want to be seen with Dad, especially on a stage in his posing trunks. You know,
posing trunks. Exactly right. Now my 7-year-old on the other hand. I may still be able to talk him into getting out there with me. I don't know. You think he's sitting here right now, so he said no. So
no, I'm surprised. Guess you take it for granted when your dad's an IFBB pro.
I usually figure a way to talk him into it, whether it's a new pack of Pokemon cards or something like that. I'll work out some deal with him. I'll get him out there with me. So
what do your kids think about bodybuilding? I mean, obviously they've been raised around it. Are they showing any kind of interest in the sport?
You know, I will say one thing, they have great genetics. That's to say, you know, they haven't done a ton of lifting on their own, but they've got the build, man. I mean, wide shoulders, round shoulders, they've got six packs. Now, they are athletes. My oldest two boys are both, you know, avid basketball players. They play, they're both, one of them's in ninth grade, he's on his middle school team, starts a point guard. The other one is a junior, and he's on the high school team. They've played AAU travel ball for the last past, I want to say 6 or 7 years. And so they're really good athletes, but in particular, basketball is their sport. Mm. Now, the oldest one has been introduced to weights pretty intensely over the last 2 years as he's been on the high school basketball team. They do a lot of weight training.
Nice.
And I could see his physique develop when they're doing their conditioning period where it's a lot of running and a lot of lifting weights.
Yeah.
Then once the season starts and they get away from the weight training, then he starts to lose it. Mm. So I've been trying to, you know, stay in his ear about keeping his weight training going so that he continues to build. I said, it's only going to make you stronger and harder to stop in basketball on the court.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm hoping that eventually they'll kind of pick up that, but I haven't really pushed it on them. You know, I'm not that guy that's going to like, okay, go out there. You got to go train now. I want them to be able to see the importance of it on their own, like I did when I was younger. Dad introduced me to it, but I took it upon myself. I said, this is going to help me with sports. I'm all over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was very committed early on, 14 years old, to making sure I hit the weights every day in my basement. And then when I got old enough to drive, I got a gym membership. I didn't miss the gym when I was training as an athlete. So, So there's signs of there. Whether they'll compete, I don't know. I think because they're so focused and they're so into basketball.
Yeah.
But you know, if they don't go on to the next level in basketball, that could be a possibility after that. You know, just the fact that we want to stay in shape, which happens with a lot of people in our sport. I think we have a lot of people that are athletes. You know, they get done with high school or college or whichever one it is. Now they just want to hit the gym and stay in shape. And they notice the changes in their physique and how it makes them feel. And I think that's how you end up having bodybuilding becomes that new competitive venture for you. So in answer to the question right now, I don't necessarily see it, but I don't think it's it could be something down the road after they finish their competitive careers in high school.
Right on, man. Right on.
But yeah, they definitely have the genetics and structure for it, man. I know my oldest son always likes to play around and kind of he likes to imitate the men's physique competitors. Don't know any mad at me out there. It's not necessarily a bad way, but he does a little posing thing, and he's got him down, man. And he could actually be a good men's physique competitor with a little bit more size on his frame.
No kidding. Get him in the teenage a little bit.
Exactly. So now he's a tall. He's tall. He's like 6'2".
Okay. And, wow.
And my middle son, he's my height right now, 5'5". It's hard to say because he's still got a few years to grow, but he may be more along my stature. Yeah. Let's say he gets 5'7 or 5'8. If he gets that tall, he may be in a position to be more competitive possibly as a bodybuilder, because he may be short and, you know, but he still has that small waist, wide shoulders. So,
right on.
But you know, it's a lot of times it's harder for a taller athlete to put on the muscle that they need for competitive bodybuilding. Now, classic physique, men's physique, those divisions could be a possibility.
Absolutely. Well, they've got the genetic background, that is, at least. So that's definitely going for them. No question. So I'm looking at the calendar right now. When we record this, we are a little bit more than 6 weeks out from the Turkey Jackson Classic. You know, this is the point, I think, in a lot of people's diets where they need to turn that up. And I think this is great. We're getting at this program out here now because it'll give people an opportunity to possibly do another show. I mean, I'm thinking up here in Michigan, we're not too far away. There's going to be Central States in the middle of October. So you could easily, you know, hit Tricky's show first and learn some stuff about your physique and go back in. Question I really want to ask you, though, Tricky, just as somebody who coaches people, somebody who's been doing this for a long time, and you know, somebody who's done a lot of shows, what would be the advice you would give to the guys and girls out there right now that are dieting down for these fall shows? They're coming to the Tricky Jackson Classic, then they're coming up to, you know, Central States, and we've got the Western after that. There's still a bunch of shows coming up. What would you suggest to them right now is the most important things that they need to be focusing on?
Well, let me point out a couple things, and then I'll go in and answer that question. But just so people know, so the Tricky Jackson Classic, it is a national qualifier.
Okay.
And we draw from 8 to 10 different states. We get people from Ohio, Tennessee, Missouri, West Virginia, Michigan. I've had competitors from Florida.
Wow.
I've had competitors from Wisconsin. Illinois. So we get a lot of different states that actually come in, I think, for one or two reasons. One, it's a national qualifier. Two, it's not that far from nationals.
Right.
And then, three, I think it's recognize my name and say, hey, I'm gonna go to Tricky Show. And, that's not necessarily a bad thing because, which is another reason why I changed the name to Tricky Jackson. I remember early in my career when I would select shows, once I started going out of the state, I started looking at shows that were put on by pro bodybuilders at the time. Mm. Because I thought that it might be a well-run show, a good show to do, and I might get an opportunity to meet that pro. And so that's one of the things that I catch at my show was a lot of times I have a lot of athletes that are just looking, they look forward to being able to meet me and have a conversation with me even at the show.
Sure.
That's been a great thing, and I love talking to the athletes. when they come out to the show. But now back to your question. You know, one of the things I always try to tell my clients is to, you know, when you pick your shows, I always suggest to them to pick 2 to 3 shows within like a 4 to 8 week period of time.
Okay.
And you knock out your shows and then you're done for the year. Instead of doing a show in March, okay, let's take 8 to 10 weeks off and let's come back and do this show in August.
Yeah.
It really doesn't make any sense to do that because you're not going to make any gains in 8 to 12 weeks.
Right.
You know, because you're not going to be able to go completely off your diet. And so you're not going to be able to really add any muscle or any size. So I always offer to competitors, the best thing to do is try to go boom, 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 be finished. And then now you've got 7, 8 months of off season to really make changes in your physique before you jump on stage again.
That makes total sense.
So, you know, that's one of the things that I always try to get my clients to do. The other thing about that is typically, especially for a lot of newer competitors, is that you have a tendency to get a little bit better each show, especially if they're in that window of time. So what tends to happen is competitors can tweak their diet. They can increase or decrease cardio. Yeah. They can up food, whatever they need to do to make improvements from show to show from a conditioning standpoint. So if you do a show the first week of August and the judges give you feedback, well, you need to be a little tighter. Then you pick a show two or three weeks down the road that's going to give you another 3 weeks of cardio, another 3 weeks of carb depleting or fat depleting, whichever you do, yeah, so that you can bring better conditioning. Maybe they'll say, well, you're just a little bit flat. That's an easy adjustment. You just take in a little bit more food and you come back in 2 weeks and you look much better.
Yeah.
So that's an easier time frame to tweak a diet or tweak a cardio or tweak a supplement plan to make changes to try to improve the physique is in a shorter period of time as opposed to dragging the diet out that much longer, which in a lot of cases makes it harder to hold on to muscle.
Sure. Sure. Not to mention you're wasting time that you could have been growing, right?
Well, exactly right. You're exactly right. And so, and then the other thing about that is your NPC card. I mean, and I've been out of NPC for a while, but if I'm not mistaken, once you get that NPC card, doesn't the NPC card expire at the end of the year?
Yep. You got to buy one every year if you want to compete. So,
right. So, you know, why get a NPC card and do one show? You pay $110, then you got to turn around and pay $110 again the following year. If you're going to pay $110 for an NPC card, you might as well do 2 or 3 shows.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do 3, get them within a window of time where you can get them done, get off your diet, and enjoy the rest of your off season. Back to your off season and enjoy life again.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you, man. As a coach, I've seen it time and again that, you know, no matter how good you dial yourself in or you dial somebody in for a show, you know, you can always improve. You know, I've never seen somebody who's absolutely perfect. So, you know, if you can, like you said, take those criticisms and come back, the judges will like that too if you happen to be in the same area. But if not, man, I feel like the best physique at a lot of, you know, national or regional shows, it's always, you know, the hardest guy. And the more time you're dieting, I think the better you have a chance of being that person.
Yeah, you know, and you're exactly right. Conditioning is the most important thing when you're talking about local, state level, and even regional level shows. I mean, because when it comes to size, you're not going to see that complete package of size conditioning until you get to nationals and then the pro level.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're exactly right. Conditioning is the most important thing at that level of an event. So it makes sense to go ahead and do 2 or 3 of those shows so you can really tweak the conditioning and hit it perfect. Then once you get to that point, then you can make the decision, okay, well, do I need more muscle before I go to nationals? I already got my diet down to a science. Now I'll just take a little time and grow and then apply that diet once it comes time for me to step on stage. Because believe when you get to the national level, you're going to be competing against size and conditioning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you want to make sure you don't want to go to that show and say, well, I got enough size now, but I didn't know how to rip it up. I didn't know how to come in hard.
Yeah.
you're gonna go right back home and you're gonna be in the same boat. You'll learn how to diet. So, you know, the best thing to do is learn your physique, learn your diet at those level shows so that when you get to that next level, you're already ready. And I tell you, that's one of the biggest mistakes I used to see a lot of people do is they would do one or two shows. Let's say they did a national qualifier. Let's say they came in second. Let's say they even came in first. And then they say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do nationals now. I qualify for nationals. Just because you win a show, your state level show, does not mean you're ready for nationals.
Sure.
You know, so now I think if you can go on a rant and you can do three shows and you win a show in Kentucky, you win a show in Indiana, you win a show in Ohio, now you're starting to see something. Now you're going to different states. And the funny thing I'm telling you this is because this is kind of the exact same thing that I did in my amateur career.
No kidding.
Won several shows in the state, but I hadn't won an overall, but I had won my weight division as a bantamweight.
Okay.
So this was the very, I think it was the second year I competed, I was a bantamweight. I won the, I think the state show, and maybe it was the Derby at the time. Okay. I went on to nationals, I came in third, I went to nationals, got blown away. Didn't even make top five. And so I said, you know, I made my mind up for two things. I said, one, I'm going to go outside of the state, be seen by some other judges, so and see how I do there. Because I feel like if I can go, you know, it gets to the point where if you're in state, judges start knowing who you are.
Sure.
After you've done three or four shows, all you got to do really is come in and look pretty decent. They say, ah, you know, he looks good this show. Let's go ahead and give him the nod.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people, that's really what people call the politics of it. You know, you've paid your dues. You've been around. How are we going to give you the nod over this newcomer? Y'all are pretty close, but you've been around.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to give you the nod. So, you know, I said, I don't want to win a show by getting the nod. I want to be able to go somewhere where people haven't seen me and judges haven't seen me before and say, hey, man, this guy looks great.
Yeah.
You're going to win. So that's the other thing. You can win shows in your state. You can win shows out of your state. Those are good signs that you may be ready to go to the next level. The other thing that I made the decision on, and granted, again, this goes back to after I got blown away. This was a decision I made before I would go back to a national show. These were things I had to accomplish.
Okay.
So I had to win in other states, and not just my weight division, I had to win an overall. So by this point now, I was a lightweight, and I won the Battle of the Champions.
Okay.
A Battle of Champions in Cincinnati, Ohio. It was a big national qualifying event back in the day, and I won the overall as a lightweight. And then I went on to win, I think it was called the Gateway in Chicago, Illinois. And then I think I also won one in Detroit. It might have been the Great Lakes Naturals back then.
Okay, I know that show, yeah.
Remember that show?
I do, yeah.
Matter of fact, and I feel like I'm going off on a tangent, but I got to tell you the story. So Lee Haney was the guest poster at that event.
Oh, no kidding.
It was unbelievable, man. So that was the first time I had ever – might have been I don't think it was the first pro body, but I think I'd seen Ron Love. Okay. I was kind of friends with Ron Love back in the day. But Lee Haney, it was the first time I'd seen a Mr. Olympia. He was guest posing. And I remember I was up in the crowd in the balcony. I think it was at the Redford, matter of fact.
No kidding.
I was in the balcony, and Lee Haney came out to pose. He turned around and hit a back double bicep, man. His back, Scott, was so sick, I lost my mind. Balcony, I ran down to the main level, all the way up to the stage. I'm going to take pictures of this guy.
No kidding.
I was like, oh, my God, this guy's back. I said, I got to get a picture. And I ran down, and, man, it was unbelievable. I mean, this was Lee Haney when he was Lee Haney. It was like, man, this was probably like 98 or something like that.
Okay.
A long time ago. Maybe even been a little, it may have been a little earlier than that because I hadn't done the Team Universe yet. So I think the first Team Universe was 94. So it might have been like 93 or something like that. And, okay. So that was my first experience seeing Lee Haney, man, and I just lost my mind. So
that's I just had so to cool. tell
you that story real quick. But so back to what I was saying. So I won three overalls, and then I said, okay, now I'm ready to go back to national competition.
Yeah.
And I went to the next national show I went to, I believe, was Team Universe. I came in fifth. And from that point on, I was top five in every national show I did. until I started winning them, and then I started. Then I eventually got my pro card.
Right on.
So those are the tips that I'm basically letting competitors know: is don't go to the national level until you're sure you're ready. Hmm. You know, you'll win national qualifiers in your area, unless someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, man, you're a total freak," like a judge yeah. or another high level athlete. Hey, you're ready. You don't want to go yet. If you're not, make sure you're ready. And if you're not, another way to you know fill out that you're ready is to go to another state and compete and try to win there where no one knows you. You can go do that. Makes me think about some of these entertainers sometimes that are offsprings of somebody that's famous, and they want to go out on their own. You know, use a different name.
Yeah.
To become famous, you know, right. They don't want to do it off their parents. It's kind of something, you know, something like that. You know, you want to go somewhere where no one knows you. You go there and you pull off a big win. Man, you got a great physique no matter where you go.
Right.
So do that. And then the other thing I think is win overall. Don't let it be just enough that you win your class. Mm. Win your overall. If you're winning overall, that's a good sign that you may be ready for that national level stage.
Right on. We don't even have to worry about national level right now because we are working on Tricky Jackson Classic. So everybody is welcome to enter this show. Man, are we missing anything here besides the actual details of the event? Because I'd like to share that stuff. But is there anything else we're not covering about the show that we should talk about or any other aspect of your bodybuilding?
I'm going to say this because I want to make sure I don't forget it.
Yeah.
For all the details on the show, you can go to the website. It's www.trickyjacksonclassic.com. And that's Tricky, T-R-I-C-K-Y. That's the website. You can go there. Registration forms are on there. Ticket information is on there.
Okay.
All the information, host hotel. Liquid Sunrays is our feature sponsor this year.
Nice.
So they'll be doing all the tanning. Guys, I'm telling you, they do a great job. I've been with Liquid Sunrays myself for over 10 years. They do all my tanning for all my pro events and all my guest appearances. So they do a great job. We've got I'm working on right now to get some additional coverage that we've never had in the past. I'm kind of excited about this. We're looking at bringing out Maximum Muscle.
Oh, nice.
To do all the coverage. I don't know if you know Mandis Buckle and his team over there. But yeah. I've met Mandis at a couple of guest proposals that I did in Illinois. Pretty good friend. We're good friends. And I like the things they've been doing over there, so I'm going to bring them out to do the show coverage. You know, we try to make sure that we cater to the athletes because I've been on that stage. I've been backstage and I've been where they are. And I know, you know, my team is one of the best teams, I think, in the industry from the standpoint of I'm big on customer service. And what we provide is kind of a service to the athletes.
Absolutely.
We help them backstage and, you know, screaming at, you know, I've seen this at shows, man. Expediters screaming at athletes and, you know, you hurry the hell up and you get here, or you're not going to go on stage. And, you know, I think they forget, man, these guys are depleted. They've been training for 12 weeks. We don't have that in my show, man. We're going to take care of you. If we need to wait a minute to try to get yourself together, we're going to give you a minute. Get yourself together and then we'll get you on stage. We want you to look your best when you're on stage.
Yeah.
So I think you'll find anybody that's done my show from the standpoint of athlete, I think that's one of the things they like about it is I have a very friendly staff. We work with the athletes. We try to take care of them the best we can. And so you'll walk away and you won't feel like, you know, just a piece of cattle being rushed across the stage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm sure you've seen that before and you know what I mean.
I've been a part of it. I've been in shows that I felt like I was treated really great and it was refreshing and made me feel really good, you know. On the other hand, I've been in shows where I have felt that, where I felt like, yeah, I'm just getting hustled through this. And gosh, I spent so much time, you know, trying to diet down. It's a shame it's got to be this way. And guess what? I don't go back to do that show again the following year either, you know?
Right. And you're probably going to tell somebody about your experience.
Sure. I can hear your passion, you know, for this and your commitment to it. What are the exact details now?
Okay. So the website again is www.trickyjacksonclassic.com. I do want to real quickly give a shout out. We got some great sponsors. They're going to be at the show this year.
Right on.
Zilla Meals that'll be joining us this year. Tony Size, who's been with us probably for at least 10 years. I've got IFBB Pro Patricia Brown, Showstopper Health and Fitness. Show Prep, she'll be joining us this year. IFBB Pro Donna Salib, she'll be set up this year with some of her accessories and supplements, I think, in a clothing line.
Okay.
We've got Cobra Activewear, Pilar Beta will be set up. And then if anybody else is interested in getting a booth set up, tricky6162@AOL.com, or you can go through the website and contact me there.
All right, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and it's been cool to get to sit down and talk with you, brother. We are about out of time.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate your time, Tricky, and I'm excited to see the show come together, man.
Hey, Scott, man, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Hey, anytime you guys want to sit down and chat, man, have me back on and just talk about something dealing with the sport, Olympia, or whatever the case may be, just give me a shout, man. More than welcome. I'd more than be glad to come back on and chit-chat with you guys. Love talking about bodybuilding.
Awesome, man. Now I can hear it in your voice, and I will definitely take you up on that. So, guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with IFBB Pro Tricky Jackson. We'll see you at the Tricky Jackson Classic.
Peace out.
All right, guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Advices Radio, and thank you to Tricky Jackson for coming on. All right, stay tuned later in the week for Matt Jansen coming on to talk about the 5 competitors that he is taking to the Olympia this year. All right, guys, hope you have a great day, and I'll see you soon.
Voices Radio Network.